Again, you know, like, thought the first drive was good. We went out there, got some points. Thought Cam again was good with the ball, good decision making. We just couldn't connect on a couple of the deep throws. But overall, it's got to be better, guys. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. It does got to be better, but at the same time, there's always going to be things that we can take from. The urgency doesn't change, but the one thing that I would challenge our offense on, and I'll challenge everybody, is just those two fourth and ones that we had. We've got to be able to convert those. But either way, you know, just speaking for Cam. He got a little loose with the from a ball security standpoint on that second and one, but I do want to tip my cap to that linebacker. I mean, he made a hell of a play, a very, very heads up play to get the ball out.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast presented by Prize Picks. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me as always, the managing editor of TitanSize.com with some great winners and losers and another piece up already at TitanSize.com. Go check it out. And the publisher for NFL Draft on SI. It's my co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, last night's game, Titans win again, 2-0 in the preseason, but the mood in the fan base feels like the sky is falling. How are you? What is your mood? How are you doing on this fine Monday morning?
My mood is tired. Feels like I'm in regular season form. I finished writing at like 11:30 a.m. last night. I had a winners and losers piece, as you mentioned, and an updated 53-man roster projection. So both of them took quite a bit out of me. I went to bed. I got up 6.5 hours later, 6 a.m., and started writing all over again. So feels like I just haven't stopped. But I am doing well. Roundabout way to say I'm doing well. And talking some Titans week 2 preseason ball. As you said, the sky is falling in the fan base. Before we get into it, I'll admit this. I agree with, you know, kind of having more of a negative takeaway than a positive takeaway. I don't care that they won, right? What matters is what they looked like when the starters were in the game on both sides of the ball. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, they lost both on offense and defense from this, their first teamers against second teamers. So, yeah, more negative reaction than positive. That's the honest truth.
Yeah, the ones lost 16-3, and the twos won 16-3. So not bad. Yeah. Wait, no, 16-0. The twos won. Thanks to a couple missed kicks, a missed extra point, and a missed field goal from Jason Sanders. Justin, today we're going to talk about Jason Myers. Today we're going to hit on, you know, Cam Ward and the offense's performance, of course, the up and down nature, the good plays, some of the areas that we're still looking for improvement on. We're obviously going to talk about the defense giving up two big touchdowns. In fact, I got all 22 footage of both plays. We're going to look at them together, and I'll tell you why I think Alante Taylor is actually the guy to blame on both plays, not Kevin Winston Jr., not Cody Barton on the run play, as much as we want it to be Cody Barton's fault. Alante Taylor's fault on both those. We're going to look at both those plays. I got a quote from Sala. I'm going to play about that as well, and then we'll talk about some other standout players like Anthony Hill Jr. and Pat Coogan and guys that played well in this game and sort of talk about where this team's at. Thank everyone for joining the live stream. Make sure you hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, get in the live chat, stay after the stream, comment on the video. But Justin, I also want to say, as we get into it here, we're going to talk about what matters coming out of this
everything
game.
Everything matters.
Okay, but we're going to talk about what really matters and what doesn't.
Well, everything matters.
Got it. So Justin, I also wanted to say, last night we did something we've never done before for the very first time ever. The Music City Audible Discord server was popping off. We had a game thread going. You know what? Actually, the Discord server has not stopped popping off since we officially launched it on Friday morning. It's been a really fun time. If you're not a part of that, you got to become a part of that. All you got to do is become an MCA premium member on YouTube. You can get access to the Discord server. You'll have the private MCA member in season Friday live streams. $5.99 a month. If you're not seeing it at $5.99, get off your phone, go to your desktop. Apple's trying to upcharge you on the mobile device. Get involved and get on the Discord channel. I think there are plenty of people in the comments who will vouch for how much fun that Discord chat was last night during the game.
Yeah, listen, when we started it, you and I took a bit of a leap of faith, let's be honest, right? We didn't know how it was going to go. To have so many of you in there already, like the chat was always active. There was never a dull moment in the Discord. We were consistently analyzing, talking about the game, sharing opinions. Really, really excited about how the Music City Audible Discord is starting off. And if you haven't signed up yet, make sure you do it via the desktop, as Graver just said. And Angry Fetus just gave away a free membership in the comments. So that is super exciting. We've already got one new member. We'd like to see a couple of more during the stream. We'll hit the thing if we get signups during the stream. I don't care if Graver doesn't want to. I'm going to hit the thing if we get some signups during the stream today. But obviously, we are going to talk about what actually happened for the Titans on the field in week two of the preseason. And correct me if I'm wrong, we're starting with sophomore quarterback Cam Ward.
Absolutely. Let's get into Cam Ward's performance, because I think that there are two ways to look at it. Number one, like, he made another mistake that you don't want to see your quarterback making in his second year. I would call it a rookie mistake. He made one last week when he took the terrible intentional grounding penalty, bypassed the check down to Tajay Spears. It could have gone for potentially a big play, tried to hold the ball too long to make something happen, and was, you know, got the intentional grounding penalty. This week, he's rolling out of the pocket, trying to, again, extend the play. It almost looked identical to the play that happened later, where he ends up throwing downfield to Gunnar Helm in terms of his rolling out. But as he's rolling out of the pocket, a linebacker comes from behind who was coming off the edge around the left. The whole reason Cam left the pocket in the first place, I guess Ward thought that he would either get reblocked out of the play or dove for him and was on the ground or what. This linebacker's chasing him outside the pocket. Cam's carrying the ball. You know, he wants to be ready to look up and throw it, but he's not carrying it high. He definitely doesn't have two hands on the ball high and tight, like they say. He's just loosely running with it. Linebacker did make it, as Sala said, did make an amazing play to come up and dive from behind and knock the ball out of his hand. But you should never allow the linebacker to be in a position to make an amazing play there, because you should be protecting the football. So the number one thing for me that's concerning is Cam Ward a little too careless with his foot, with his protection and ball security of that football. And even in the post game, Justin, you know me, I'm like the number one Cam Ward guy in the world. I don't like to criticize him too often, but when it's warranted, I will criticize him. I thought at the podium last night, and look, tomorrow we're going to really like spend a lot more time on all the presser clips. We're going to react to yesterday's two press conferences, Ward and Sala. We're also going to hit on what Sala said this morning. We're going to break all that down with a bunch of clips tomorrow. Today we're focusing more on the game field action. But I will say about the presser, I thought Cam was a little too nonchalant about this at the podium. Like, it doesn't really matter what he's saying to people at the podium. It's like, it's mostly irrelevant. It's just what you're getting.
This is getting out of hand.
Whoops.
Well, everything matters.
Sorry. So it doesn't really matter.
Hand, though. I don't think that was the wrong one. You clipped it at the right time.
Good point. I would like to see him be a little more like, not like he took accountability, but he also said like, no, you know, it was a great play by the linebacker. I didn't have my ball security right, but it was also a great play. It's like, no, I don't want to hear it was a great play by the linebacker. I want to hear that's something I really got to work on. I had an issue with ball security and fumbles last year, led the league in fumbles last year. I've already fumbled in the preseason now, and I need to make that a priority to correct that for myself. And I will, and I promise you, it's not going to be an issue. That's what I want to hear. Again, it doesn't matter what he says, but it does, like, it does not inspire the most confidence when he's so nonchalant and lackadaisical about it. It's like, doesn't this feel more important to you? I don't know. That's where I want to start. And then we can talk about the good plays he made as well.
I'll be blunt. I was writing. I didn't watch the pressers last night, but I want to say Paul Kuharsky. Yeah, I know.
We'll get
Paul
to the Kuharsky,
chat. Paul Kuharsky shared the exact same sentiment, I believe, that you did. He had mentioned on Twitter, he had tweeted like a little, I don't remember the word he used, the phrasing, but basically he didn't love Ward or Salah's presser. He thought it was a little too, quote, not a quote, but forgiving, if you will, to the performance in general. That's in line with what you just said about Ward. I'm going to share my thoughts on Ward's play in general because I haven't had a chance to do that yet. I thought he was better, obviously, than he was versus the 49ers, and that growth is important. He finished 8 of 12 with 69 yards, took one sack. I guess the sack was the fumble, right? I believe that went down as a credited sack, I think, at least.
Yes, that's how
and,
that works.
You know, my general sentiment, and I'm not trying to pump sunshine and rainbows, but we'd be feeling a lot better about his day, and you know where I'm going, if Carnell Tate and Gunnar Helm made two plays that they probably should have made, right? The Carnell Tate one was the more difficult of the two. It was a fade. You know, he's trying to catch it over his shoulder while also focusing on where his feet are near the sideline. But he probably should have caught it, right? Like, I think it's fair to say you expect a number four overall pick to make that catch, and he didn't make it. The Gunnar Helm one was not even close to 50-50. Sorry, he absolutely should have made it. Like, Cam Ward made a great off-script play, typical of him, kind of rolling to his right, I believe it was. He's near the sideline. He's got a bunch of guys closing in on his face, and he finds the off-script magic. And Gunnar Helm had more than enough real estate near that sideline to get both feet in. Really disappointing that he did it. As Garrett points out here, like, he's 9 of 12 for 100, if Helm makes that catch. He's 10 of 12, right, if Carnell Tate makes the catch he should make. So I think that put it made a big difference in how people are evaluating the performance, or they're looking at the box score or whatever. I will say, I you know, 10 of 12, the completion percentage is excellent. We're not talking about accuracy, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I will say that I did have a problem with two of his plays. The fumble that you just covered, I won't get too into it. But the miss to Carnell Tate as well. Call me crazy, that one almost bothered me more. Obviously, it's not as costly or as concerning. But all the talk lately about his accuracy, I mean, that was an inaccurate misfire. For me, there was no way around it. He's got to complete that throw. He should complete that throw. Enough open space. Carnell Tate's got more than enough separation where it should be a completion, and it wasn't because he just flat out missed it, right? And I guess it bought, sorry, I know you got a counter, but I guess because of all the misses in week one of the preseason where he had some inaccurate misses, I think that's why this one bothered me more than the fumble. I just want to see him hit those throws.
Yeah, I think to me that one, I'm not writing it off. Don't get me wrong. I can identify the mechanical issue that happened to him on that play. And it's not that doesn't make it an excuse, but he's stepping up in the pocket and evading an outside pass rush to get up. I don't have the film of this one or I'd show it. To get up in the pocket, he takes two like lead steps in the pocket before he throws the ball. And we talked about this a little bit in the offseason, Justin, about how sometimes when a quarterback does that, the ball rifles on them a little harder and faster than they intended versus if they're just in their normal drop back, with their feet planted at their base and stepping into a throw versus sort of hopping forward into a throw, that can cause the ball to sail on you, to fly harder and higher than you anticipated. So I think that that's an easy look at the film, see why that miss happened. It was totally different. When it comes to inaccuracies, they're all inaccurate, I guess, but it was totally different from last week where almost all of his inaccuracies last week were caused by I'm moving too quickly. I'm sped up, not necessarily sped up in the play, but some of them timing of the play felt like he was sped up. Some of them just moving through the motion of throwing the ball too quickly. I don't think he was sped up yesterday, which I think is a big sign of improvement. He was a lot more settled down.
He was
hitting the easy gimmies. He had the 33-yard explosive to Pollard that was like perfectly placed. It's a short pass. It should be easily and perfectly placed, but it was, which is what you want to see. And it out in front so that Pollard could catch it on the run and pick up a huge gain. That's what led to them getting points. He hit Wandale a couple times underneath on time and on target. He had pinpoint accuracy on the sideline one to Alec Iamanner. He was like 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage. The play only went for like a 2-yard gain, but he's like 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage and throws it pinpoint accurate to Iamanner, who's coming on the sideline in a scramble drill where it looked like he's throwing it away. And suddenly Iamanner catching the ball. So I think his accuracy was pretty good in this game. Obviously that miss to Carnell Tate does stand out. If he had been off all game and that Tate one was included in the mix, then I would have a bigger problem with it. But I do think we can like find the root cause of the mechanical issue on that one.
When you boil it down, he had four incompletions, right? And you got the Tate, I call it a drop because he got his hands on it near the sideline. The Gunnar Helm, totally inexcusable, really frustrated the heck out of me. And then this one, good point by Garrett, like I couldn't remember what the fourth incompletion was. And it was the one that was clearly DPI, where Alec Iamanner was mugged before the ball got there, and I guess because it wasn't called, like if that's called, it goes down as a non-play, right? So it's not an incompletion, it's not a completion. He really should have been, I guess it would have been, what, 10 of 11 on the day if the two receivers, the pass catchers, catch the balls they should have caught and the DPI was caught, the only miss would have been the Tate, the only incompletion would have been the Tate one that I'm complaining about. So overall, I think it was a, it was a decent night for Cam Ward. It wasn't excellent, it wasn't great, but it certainly wasn't bad, and it certainly was better than it was in preseason week one. You know, trending in the right direction, I think is probably fair to say.
And this is a great point by Garrett Michael too. Like the, I didn't even want to really talk about the refs. The refs were awful in this game all around. I mean, if this was a regular season game, we could go in on how much that matters. But in this game, it doesn't matter. What we're looking for is execute the fundamentals of the base formations of the play calls that are not exotic at all. Salah reiterated last night, and again, we'll talk about it tomorrow, but Salah reiterated last night that this is as base as you can get. So talking about Carnell Tate, which we can spend a little bit of time on maybe after our break here, not having not having a catch and having two opportunities to make a play, the one that he didn't get his fingertips on and the one that Cam Ward missed. Also, I will say, while I was complaining about Cam at the podium not taking enough accountability for the fumble, he did take all the accountability on the gunner play. On the one that Helm couldn't get his feet inbounds, he said he's got to get that ball more inside and allow Gunnar Helm to make the catch. And Salah said something along the same line. Salah said, like, he's running full speed across the field. There's not a ton of room there. That's a really tough play to make. But we see guys make that play every Sunday in the league. We see guys make that play. And we've seen Helm. We've seen Helm make that play. Last season, Helm made multiple toe tapping. And he was like the one guy that was helping out the quarterback when the rest of the team was letting him down. It would have been nice to see that last night. But the one thing Salah said before the game, too, and that I totally agree with, Justin, and why I don't think a lot of this stuff really does matter, is that Salah said, we want to see the right decisions being made, being in the correct spots, knowing what you're, where you're supposed to be and being there, and the execution and the techniques will come later. I think the biggest thing to me about this game is it was a step forward from last week. If we can get another step forward next week and then one more step forward when week one actually arrives, the offense really will be there. Cam Ward said it last night. Like, we are so close. It's just about making that play. Like, I do think on the DPI, he could have thrown the ball out more in front, but also that's a DPI 99 times out of 100. And I can't understand, in a game where the refs were very quick to throw ticky-tack flags on everything, I cannot understand.
The Cordell Flott call was just outrageous.
So bad. And Salah said he didn't agree with the Tony Adams penalty either, that we never even got a replay of on a play where Cody Barton had a negative, like, tackled him for like a 4-yard loss on the play. And it's negated by a Tony Adams penalty that Salah said he didn't agree with. The Cedric Gray thumbs down celebration. Like, I do get you can't do that in the direction. You can't do, yeah, the Schlottman hold was bad. Cedric Gray, you can't do that in the opponent's face. Now, I think he was doing it towards the crowd and towards the sideline. But if the ref is interpreting him as looking at Elijah Arroyo when he does that, that can be an understandable penalty. I personally don't think that that's what he did, but if that's how the ref saw it, you got to be more careful. Do it towards your own team. Don't do it towards the opponents, and you won't get flagged for that. It's a great learning moment. Like, it's great that all these things are happening in the preseason, because these are things that you need to have fresh in your mind so that you know not to do them. The Cam fumble, the Cedric Gray penalty, like, all these things are things that are good teaching moments in the moment. But at the same time, like, you want those teaching moments to happen in practice so that when we are watching the game, it doesn't look as bad. Anyway, I think we can move on, talk about the defense and some other players that played well in this game and some other players that maybe didn't play so well in this game. But Justin, did you see the news this morning? The Browns have named Deshaun Watson their starting quarterback for this season. Well, the good news is we can all capitalize on that, because Prize Picks is the best place to run your game all season long. It's America's number one sports pick app, Mello, and I have a couple plays that I want to throw out there today.
Yeah, I'm curious what you've got for me. The Deshaun Watson news was pretty big.
So I have watched Deshaun Watson play football since he was traded to the Browns in this preseason, and I do not believe he's going to remain the starting quarterback. So I'm going with a season-long, this is a season-long play on the NFL, Shedeur Sanders, more than 6.5 regular season starts, because I do not see Watson surviving the year, and I think they are going to want to get a long look at Sanders to know what they're going to do when they end up picking in the top three this year. Got to pair it with something. Amon-Ra St. Brown has had double-digit touchdown catches in three straight seasons. I don't see any reason that stops this year, so I took Amon-Ra to go more than 9.5 receiving touchdowns this season, along with the Sanders pick.
The Deshaun Watson news was staggering to me. Not sure what Cleveland's doing there, so I do enjoy the Shador Sanders projection on your part. Download the Prize Picks app today and use code CLNS to get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. Once again, download the Prize Picks app and use code CLNS. You'll get $150 instantly in lineups when you win your first $5 lineup.
Prize Picks, America's number one sports picks app. Audio audience, we'll be right back. And video audience, we'll take a quick little break here. And when we come back, all 22 breakdown of the two defensive breakdowns. Be right back. You know that 6 p.m. moment where dinner's supposed to happen, but there's nothing in the fridge? That used to be every Tuesday of my life. But now, I keep the freezer stocked with Omaha Steaks. Tender steaks, flavorful burgers, even seafood, chicken, sides, not just steak, all delivered right to my door. Arrives frozen and ready to go. Yes, frozen delivery can be that good with Omaha Steaks because it's steakhouse quality without steakhouse prices. I grilled the ribeye burgers last weekend. They were beefy, juicy, and actually these burgers tasted like a steak because it is steak, ground from real cuts. If you've never tried Omaha Steaks, start with the Burger Perfection Flight. Comes with 20 premium steak burgers from 5 distinct cuts, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, you can get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF. BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You've heard us talk about BetterHelp for the past month or so now, but I don't know that we've ever actually talked about how much people love this service when they use it. You can check it out yourself at betterhelp.com/reviews to see amazing customer reviews in real time. And these reviews are updated every day, with hundreds of people saying how much they love BetterHelp and how helpful it's been to them. Please visit betterhelp.com/reviews to see for yourself. BetterHelp has an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on over 1.7 million client session reviews. The feedback from people who have actually used the service speaks for itself. BetterHelp therapists have at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of hands-on experience. They also hold all required education, training, and certifications across a range of mental health specialties. BetterHelp makes it easy to get started. Just answer a few questions, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, and switch therapists at any time if it's not the right fit. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. It's football season, Justin, the best time of year to make sports bets as far as I'm concerned. And whether you've been betting your whole life or just trying to get into it this season, MyBookie is the best way to place your bets.
My favorite part about MyBookie, you don't need to be an expert. They have NFL lines every week, every game. Find your sweet spot, place your bets, and make betting fun again.
Yeah, Justin, and my favorite part about MyBookie? I can place my bets wherever I am, wherever I want to, before the game kicks off. Like, it doesn't matter where I am. MyBookie.com is available, and so I'll be playing there all season long.
And guess what? If you're new to MyBookie, the Music City Audible has you covered. The Bet Back bonus gives you protection on your first play. Sign up with our promo code MCA, opt into the Bet Back bonus, and take your first shot with a safety net.
Yeah, that's right, Justin. If your first wager loses, you get it right back. No questions asked. Make the most of football season. Make all the action as important as you possibly can. Get in now. Cash in on the season with MyBookie. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. But remember, Audible Army, always bet responsibly. Never gamble more than you can afford to lose. MyBookie!
The two plays are hateful. You know, one, the pass play, I'm glad it happened, because that is a fundamental issue in the defense, that if you don't get those reps, you just don't, you don't recognize it fast enough. And for it to happen, glass half full, I'm glad it happened. Half empty, it's a shitty thing that happened. The run play, really well blocked by them. Corner had a long way to track in there for a crack replace, but a really good run from them. But those two plays, wish we hadn't back, but overall I thought the defense was pretty good today.
I do agree with him that the defense overall was pretty good. Welcome back, audio audience. Robert Sala speaking after the game last night. I do agree overall the defense was pretty good outside of those two plays. And while Drew Locke's completion percentage was quite amazingly, insanely good, again, 2 weeks in a row, the Titans' first-string defense has allowed the opposing quarterback to complete way more passes than they should be. There was a big difference this time. Last week, Curtis Rourke was hitting the wide receivers against the corners who were winning one-on-one matchups in a zone scheme that turned into a match-man scheme, man-to-man, one-on-one coverage. The corners were simply losing those matchups and getting beat. Totally different story this week. Outside of the long touchdown to Elijah Arroyo that we're about to look at the film of, almost every completion against the first-string defense, outside of a screen or two, was to a tight end, running back, or fullback. That is still an issue, but a big difference between that and getting burned on the outside because your corners are getting abused by the opposing second-string wide receivers. This was more about Drew Locke taking underneath stuff, Titans defenders needing to rally to tackle, versus Titans corners getting abused on the outside and giving up big plays down the field. The only real big completion they gave up was the blown coverage, which is just a total miscommunication, something, the kind of thing they'll put in the meeting room and fix it instantly. And the way Sala talked about it, we'll play tomorrow on the show, is where they see it one time and you go, ah, now I get it. Now I understand. It's clicking for me. He, of course, Sala and all of us wish that that hadn't happened in a game that was the only nationally televised game the Titans will play this entire season. But the point is, it happened in a preseason game where you still have time. You still have 3 weeks to get these issues corrected. But it was disappointing to see those things happen, obviously, even though it's just a preseason game.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I can't totally get to a point where I could even say, you know, the defense played well outside of those two plays, because you can't give up a 36-yard touchdown pass and then a 70-yard touchdown run on the next drive when it's your starting defense against backups. It just can't happen. And listen, the coverage breakdown on the first one, yeah, you'd like to think, you know, that's not a you're better than me thing. That's just a mental error. Good time for it to happen during the preseason. Yes, you know, it's something that you need to get fixed, as you put it up on screen here. And it's something that should get fixed, and in truth should quickly get fixed. It can't happen. And then with the run, you know, like he said, I'll be on a credit where it's due. I hate to say it because I want to just put it on the Titans. I did kind of think it was well blocked up front, in truth, and it still can't happen, and it's inexcusable. But I did think it was pretty well executed from the Seahawks side. But at the end of the day, can't give up two explosive touchdowns on two of your own, you know. How many drives did they play the first team? Two or three the first team?
Simmons only played two. I think by the third drive we had Anthony Hill on the field and a bunch of backups.
Malik Herring, Jalen Holmes. I think it was on that third drive. You're correct. So that second string defense came in. You can't give up two explosive touchdowns on your only two drives.
So let's take a look at this play here. This is the touchdown, obviously the passing touchdown to Elijah Arroyo. What trips up the Titans secondary is this motion by Brady Russell, the Seahawks fullback. The fact that he's coming outside here, now the way that this is going to break is, I'm not 100% sure of the responsibilities, that's my caveat I'll say right now, but I do believe that this is Alante Taylor's responsibility to pick up here. I believe that they're covering outside to in, right? So Alante's got the outside man here. Depending on where they go, it's also a zone look. So it depends on where these Seahawks players end up running their routes to. And that's what makes it difficult on the defense before they've really fully ingested and just have it ingrained in their minds what their coverage rules are on plays like this. But without that motion, I don't think we have an issue. If this motion doesn't happen, the Titans don't blow this coverage. Now, that said, motions are going to happen. They're very frequent, especially in today's NFL. So you got to know how your assignment is changing when a player comes in motion. But the reason that I think it's on Taylor is Russell does not get outside Arroyo, right? So this is not a pass off where they are switching, where now if Russell had come all the way out here, that's Taylor's guy, and Winston would be on Arroyo, and they'd have to make that communication very quickly because the snap comes like during the motion.
Yeah, immediately.
But because he stays more or less on the inside of Arroyo there when the ball is snapped, that makes Arroyo Taylor's man, the outside man, and Russell is for Winston to cover. And
I
if we go look back at the...
At. Yeah, I could see it. I mean, obviously you have a better angle of it than I do, but I see what you mean.
What the real giveaway for me here is on the other side of the field, what Cordell Flott's doing. So this receiver right here is going to run a hitch, 10-yard hitch, 6-yard hitch or so to here. But Flott's not going to stay on the hitch. Flott's going to take the deep field. And you got a safety, or no, you got a linebacker who's supposed to come over to take that hitch out. Hooker's going to the deep third. That's the other giveaway to me, is that you have, let me see it one more time. Yeah, you got Hooker in the deep third, right? So that's your center fielder safety. If this is a cover two look, you'd expect two safeties to be back. And you'd expect Hooker to be on half of the field. Because Hooker goes to the middle of the field, that tells you it's cover three, and you got Hooker as the deep third in the middle. You got Flott as the deep third on the outside. The outside guy has the deep third on the other side of the field, especially when the outermost receiver to that side of the field runs deep. So if we watch here, you can see Winston is calling out, I've got outside, I've got outside. But somebody mishears it or misunderstands it. And Taylor, who initially is carrying, breaks it off because he must have thought, oh, Russell was aligned outside of Arroyo, so he becomes my responsibility. And nobody picks up Elijah Arroyo. I posted this on Twitter saying I think this is on Alante Taylor, and got a reply that if you watch the live broadcast, I haven't actually gone back and done this myself. If you watch the live broadcast after the play while the Seahawks are celebrating, you can actually see Alante Taylor tapping his chest to say, my bad, that's on me.
Then I think you nailed the breakdown. Excellent job. It's a miscommunication, and it's a good call by the Seahawks, in all honesty. New offensive coordinator Brian Fleury, who knows Robert Saleh, having worked together with him in San Francisco for a number of years, obviously knows that defense. You got to wonder if, you know, he knows that a Saleh defense has had those issues before with the motion, and Kyle Shanahan runs a ton of motion in San Francisco as well. So you got to wonder how well Fleury knows Saleh's defense and if that's something he had identified in previous practices or whatever. But Brady Russell comes in motion. As you said, he does not get outside Arroyo. It's awfully close. Taylor obviously, you know, misviews it, would be my guess. And, I'm picking up Russell here when he's supposed to follow Arroyo instead. So it's one of those things that, like Robert Saleh said in the presser, if it's going to happen, you want it to happen in the preseason. That film, as we just did, is easily, you know, put up on the screen. And how long does that take to correct? 60 seconds? 30 seconds? Right? Like, Robert Saleh is going to point that out. Taylor already knew it was on him live. And you work out those little communication kinks, and you move on from it, and you're better for it.
So I don't think it was on Kevin Winston Jr. A lot of people took to Twitter immediately, including me in our Discord group, and you, I saw, say something too. Like, everyone watching live thinks that this is on Kevin Winston Jr., and it's easy to understand why you think that. He's the guy that's trying to chase him. He's a safety. You'd think that he's supposed to be back, but I really and Robert Saleh was even... Yeah, exactly. You really think that that's the case? Robert Saleh was asked about it on this morning's presser and was like, I'm not going to tell you our coverage rules, I'm sorry, but we'll get it fixed, is basically what he said. And Paul Karski did have a good point that I think tracks with what you were saying at the top of this segment, which was, shouldn't they know the rules in this game already? Shouldn't they already know where they're supposed to be and who's supposed to take who? And Saleh was like, yeah, we should, and we do, but, you know, in the moment, things are moving fast. So, yeah, all that to say, maybe I am...
I'm always glazing Kevin
a little bit here by letting him off the hook. But, I mean, somebody's got to notice even when your teammate blows their responsibility. So maybe that's where you can put it a little bit on Winston. But I do think that this was pretty clearly to me on Alante Taylor. And, you know, they'll get it corrected. Let's look at the other one, Justin, because the long run. Now, this is a sad thing. I also think the long run was on Alante Taylor. And something that Robert Saleh said in that clip I played, the corner has a long way to come to fill the crack lane, right? Or to hit the crack fill. What does that mean? Let's talk about what we think that means here. So we look at the long run. So what is a crack fill, right? Well, typically when you have a receiver here, making a crack block. That means he's coming inside to pin. Either he would come down this way and pin a defensive lineman, or he's going to come up this way to pin a linebacker. He actually ends up pinning the safety on the crack fill, which means Taylor has responsibility to fill the place where the crack block came from first, which he does. He starts to get to, he's got the edge contained. Like, Taylor is the edge contained man here. That's what happens after the crack fill, after this receiver runs to make this crack back block. Taylor has to fill the outside and contain the edge. But at this point, and you see Taylor initially coming down to fill that edge. At this point, he's not bouncing this. It's clear that he's not bouncing this. And now you have a crack block here that is taking Hooker, who should be in this gap, out of the gap because of this block. It's a good block. Like you said, it's a really well-executed play. And I think really well-executed play should have gone for about 8 to 10 yards. Not a really well-executed play that should have gone for a 69-yard house call. That's the big difference here. At this point, as the back is into the hole and Hooker is being pinned inside, Taylor's got to fill this hole. And watch Taylor, how slow he is to get into that hole. He's still coming downhill. He does have two difficult responsibilities here. He's got to contain the outside, and then he has a long way to as Salah said, to fill that hole. It takes him too long to get over there, and by that point, it's over. And I also kind of like, I know it's preseason, but give me more effort than this, buddy. Your teammates are still sprinting down the field. That kind of pissed me off a little bit. It's like, I know it's preseason, it doesn't really matter, but I would like to see a little bit of effort, especially when you blew your assignment on the play.
Yeah, I thought when he kind of let up, I thought Wright was already destined for the end zone. But I
probably
get it. I think, yeah, the effort could be. I thought it was well blocked. I mean, yeah, when you watch from that angle, it's pretty clearly on 24, right, who's coming inside there. I'm not trying to take anything away from the Titans have to be better, but I do think this second-team Seahawks O-line, like the center, Oluwatimi's a good player. I think he's a starting caliber center in the NFL. I'm assuming Josh Jones was in on this play for the Seahawks, who's probably one of the best swing tackles in the league. This is just a well-designed, well-blocked, well-executed play by a second-team O-line that's probably one of the better, you know, second team in the league.
Yeah, I will say, like, again, like to my point earlier, it's a well-blocked play that should have been stopped here. Taylor should be tackling him right here. So it's a well-blocked play, and a well-blocked play can get you 10 yards. It shouldn't necessarily result in a 69-yard explosive house call. So that's where you have things to correct. And like my spin zone on all this is like, it is good that this is happening now. I totally agree with Robert Saleh, who reiterated multiple times on this morning's Zoom presser that he is happy these things happened, because it's the kind of thing that once you see it once, you understand your responsibility way better. And it's their first time, all these guys playing in a brand new scheme. There's a lot of new stuff. Their heads must be swimming right now. And I do think that this could mean the Titans get off to a rough start this season. Like, I could see them losing to the Jets in week one and the Eagles in week two. And that wouldn't be surprising or shocking. I mean, this team is still rebuilding. And the other thing I'll say about this, Justin, is at this point in the year, like, they're not scheming anything for this preseason game. Saleh, again, reiterated that this morning as well and last night, that there is no scheme here. They're not putting players in a position to make plays. They're just asking them to execute the base fundamentals of the scheme, things like passing off the player when he's the outside most guy, and they're recognizing who has who on a motion, on a pass play, filling a crack lane that Alante Taylor didn't fill here. Those are fundamental things that they need to have down by this time next week, I would say. But they did show a lot of progress from San Francisco game to this game, just like Cam Ward did. Let's see them continuing to progress. They still have 3 weeks to keep making that progress. And if by week four, they're still having communication issues and still not understanding the rules of the defense, that's when it's time to hit the panic button on the season, but not in preseason week two. That's where I say this stuff matters, because it gives them stuff to correct in practice, but it doesn't really matter.
Well, everything matters.
Whatever.
You've gotten a lot of use out of that drop today. Yeah, I'm with, like, I don't want to talk too much about week one and stuff, because I hate to admit it, but I could see it too. Like what you just said, the evil that you put out into the world. And listen, all the comments in the chat right now, tell me what confirm what I already think. Like, this fan base is going to lose it if they lose to the Jets in week one. Like, coming off consecutive 3-14 seasons as, I don't know what the word is, empathetic, whatever it is, as like nonchalant, you know, how little this fan base cares already coming off 3-14 consecutive. they lose week one to the Jets, you're already going to lose, I think, a large portion of the fan base that quickly. So I really hope it doesn't happen. But I'm with you. It's well within the realm of possibility. And maybe I'm already coping. But I think the Jets got a better offense. I mean, obviously, it depends what Geno Smith does. Their O-line is better than the Titans' O-line. Their running backs are better than Titans' running backs. They've got good receivers, good tight ends. Like, I don't think this Jets offense is going to be as bad as some people think it's going to be.
Agreed.
So the Titans' defense, like, they're going to have their stuff together. And look, they've got a new, they got a new offensive coordinator and a new defensive coordinator. And they've undergone a lot of change in the offseason as well. So hopefully they also have some of these kinks that they've got to work out from communication standpoint and all that. But yeah, this defense is going to have to be on their P's and Q's quickly. Or I do think this Jets offense could hit them for some bigger plays than maybe the general public realize.
It's just preseason, but Geno Smith was 7-for-7 for 65 yards and a touchdown the other day on, I think, was that game Thursday or Friday?
I do a little Jets. Yeah, it doesn't hit the drop. I do a little Jets coverage too, and I want to say for the majority of camp, he's been pretty on point during practice for them.
Yeah. So pre-cope, it's week one. Week one is a liar. So if the Titans lose to the Jets, that actually means they're going to have a good season following that lying performance of week one. We're getting way ahead of ourselves there, yeah. I think.
Let's take our second repeat just said, but I won't because it's
let's take our second break here, Justin. We'll come back, talk about Anthony Hill, Pat Coogan, and Joey Sly, the three, to me, big winners. I didn't actually read your piece yet, Justin. I'm sorry, I haven't had time yet this morning. I will get to it. I'm imagining you had those three guys as winners. I'm not 100% sure. But, you know, if you're in the Discord, you know we were talking about helping Mello figure out who the winners would be, especially midway through the second quarter when it was like, we have no winners. This team is terrible. What is this? We'll be right back. Welcome back, audio audience. All right, let's break down some big winners and a loser from this game, and I have some thoughts on all of them. Three big winners to me. First, we'll start with Joey Sly, who has been literally perfect since his misses at the Nissan Stadium Friday night scrimmage two and a half weeks ago. He hasn't missed a kick, and that's in preseason, that's in joint practice, that's in regular practice. I think Jim Wyatt has him at like 28 of 28 or maybe better even after last night's game. Like, he has literally not missed a kick since then. I've tweeted this last night, Justin. The most pleasant surprise for me so far from preseason action is Joey Sly being a reliable, not just reliable, but big leg, reliable, basically the Titans MVP so far through two preseason games.
Yeah, I was worried about him because I've never had a ton of faith in him, and the scrimmage was concerning. They worked out a bunch of kickers. They were obviously slightly concerned. And how has he responded? He's 8-for-8 through two preseason games with like four field goals from 55 yards. Like, he's been absolute money, lights out. They don't even have a kicker on the roster, a second one that they're competing with. So I'm going to keep it short. Shout out to him and shout out to Bones Fossil, of course, excellent special teams coordinator, for quickly correcting whatever issues. Kicking is so mechanical. It's so nuanced. They quickly corrected whatever issues led to all the misses at the blue and white scrimmage. And it looks like it's full steam ahead for Joey Sly.
Yeah, I love to see him kicking it well. Hopefully he can keep it up. Seems to be good in a good place mentally, physically. Everything is as perfect as it could be for him right now. So let's just keep that rolling. Another big winner for me, and the biggest winner, I think, of the night, is Anthony Hill Jr. Now, I think Cody Barton got abused a little bit in pass coverage on the Seahawks' first drive before the touchdown. He was way late getting outside to his responsibility, gave up like a 15-yard reception. He did make a really nice play for a negative, like a big loss for Seattle that was negated by a Tony Adams penalty that Robert Saleh said after the game he didn't agree with. But he did make a nice tackle there. I do think he was out of position on a couple other plays. And then Anthony Hill Jr. comes in with the twos and is nonstop making plays all around the football, consistently all around the football. Had an interception on a play that was more or less thrown right to him, but he did have to kind of slide over in front of the ball. So he did a good job of sort of baiting, I thought. He did a good job of baiting Jalen Milroe into making that throw and then jumping in front of it to pick it off. When you look at the tackle numbers, he's at the top of the list for this game. 7 total tackles, led the Titans by a decent margin. 5 solo tackles. Nobody else had more than 3 solo tackles. So nobody else had more than 2 except for Cedric Gray, who had 3. And he was in on a sack that he did not get credit for in the box score, but he was everywhere. I actually, you know, I think it's a matter of time before he's getting more run than Cody Barton. I don't think it's going to happen immediately still. I still think they're going to be slower with him, but I do think it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought, first of all, I think Pro Football Focus had him graded. I saw this morning in the 90s. I think he was the best graded rookie linebacker from week two of the preseason. I mean, the interception, Jalen Milroe kind of telegraphed it a bit, but still sat in his zone. We know how difficult coverage can be for a rookie linebacker. He was in the right spot, took advantage of a ball that was thrown at him. Then he comes up the middle, up the gut on a blitz later on. And I bothered me. I didn't know who that was with, but it looks like he shared half a sack with one of the D linemen who came up up the gut with them. So
he didn't get statistical credit for it, which
I
is lame.
He should have. I mean, I guess the other guy kind of finished it or started the process first. But anyways, I thought he should have gotten half a sack on that play. So I'm going to credit him with one if they incorrectly didn't do so. Yeah, strong performance from Anthony Hill. I'm with you. I still think they're going to value Cody Barton's maturity, leadership, experience for now, especially to be truthful, when you're trying to win initially. The Titans are trying to win. They're not trying to rebuild. Playing a rookie linebacker, even though he's obviously the more athletic of the two, it's going to come with your occasional rookie mistake and your missed assignment and your missed gap. I don't think they want to live with that yet. Right? I think they probably think, yeah, Cody Barton's less athletic of the two, but he's not going to make the mental errors and he gives us a better chance to win. Because when a rookie linebacker makes a mistake, in truth, it tends to lead to a 69-yard touchdown run or a big play, right? Cody Barton's probably not going to make those mistakes, which is likely why he still plays early. But I'm excited about Anthony Hill. Great week two showing, and I can't wait to watch him gradually get more playing time.
Mike Herndon tweeted something that I fully agree with, and even though we both agree with this, we still feel the Titans probably won't agree with this to the point of everything you just said. Mike said, "You'll never convince me that the Titans aren't better off living with Anthony Hill's rookie mistakes now instead of watching Cody Barton be two steps late to everything." I think you nailed it, though. The difference is two steps late means you give up a 10 to 15 yard play. Rookie mistake where you're in the wrong spot, as we saw last night, can lead to 34-yard touchdown passes, 69-yard touchdown runs, or other big-time explosive touchdowns, which, again, in a bend-but-don't-break philosophical defense, you will take the guy who's two steps slow over the guy who might make a catastrophic mistake. So I think that's why we're going to see them bring Anthony Hill along a little bit slower, but, man, I really hope he proves himself and can get in the lineup quicker than that. Justin, the last guy that I have a winner on, and then I want to talk about maybe some losers, is Pat Coogan. Holy cow, was that second, or I guess third team, the Will Levis group, where they almost felt like they didn't trust Will Levis to throw the ball very much. I mean, they came out and ran the ball, like eight straight times? And if it hadn't been for a couple of holding penalties, they might have just run it down the entire field, down the throats of the Seahawks threes, and just said, we don't need to throw the ball. The offensive line got in such a groove. But it was really keyed by Pat Coogan working at the pivot at the center spot there in the middle of that offensive line. He also played with Trubisky in the twos, and he continued to play as the backup center with the threes, getting him a lot of reps, preparing him to be the backup center, I believe, in case something happens to Austin Slotman. But literally, if you go back and watch that second half with the Titans have the ball, every single play, Pat Coogan is coming hard off the ball. He is putting his hands into the chest of a defender and moving him yards off the line of scrimmage or turning him and sealing off an inside run lane. Every single run of that drive where they ran it every time was run off of Pat Coogan's back, him paving the way. It was super impressive to watch.
He got some reps with the twos, as you mentioned. I'm glad you did, because I was going to throw that in there. Twos and threes. Andre James did come in later at center, very late in the game. But Coogan got a lot of reps, as you mentioned. He was by far the best member of that second-team O-line for the Titans, right? And third, like, it wasn't even close. Very inspiring. You love to see it. And I'm with you guys. Like, 2027, pretty strong chance that he could be your starting center. I wonder if week one, and, you know, knock on wood, God forbid, if Slotman were to go down with an injury, do they put Coogan in the game or do they put in Jackson Slater, who's obviously got some center flexibility? I think there's a decent shout, at least, that it's Coogan.
I think it's Coogan. I think I was going to have Jackson Slater on my losers list. I don't think Jackson Slater played particularly well last night. He committed a holding penalty that wiped out a Xavier Restrepo touchdown. Yeah, he was getting beat a few times. I mean, he didn't have any super glaring losses in pass protection, but he also wasn't – he just wasn't particularly impressive. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I don't want to cut you off, but I wrote this in an article that's actually going to publish tomorrow, so I guess a bit of a spoiler alert. Is it impossible they cut him? Like, I don't think they do, but just hear me out. Like, if Coogan's your backup center, and Volson is your first backup guard, which I still think is... Volson played quite a bit last night, and I didn't necessarily notice him. Probably a good thing. And
I noticed him.
Oh, did you? Okay. Well, I keep pointing to the $2 million in guaranteed money on his one-year contract as a reason for why I don't think they'll cut him. I'm not leaving Slater off my 53-man roster projection, but I do think it's within the realm of possibility that they cut him.
To answer this question from Ray School in the chat, was Slater playing at all at offensive center or OC, offensive coordinator? No. At center last night, he played one snap at center and 30 at right guard. That's it. So he was mostly playing right guard. I don't know what.
That must have been for like a guy had to come out of the game for one play issue.
Yeah.
Because Coogan was the center and then Andre James was the center later on.
I didn't see that specific play, but PFF has him down with one snap at center. I do think that Cordell Volson got absolutely abused on one of the few negative runs. He got totally turned around and just lost the matchup instantly at the line of scrimmage, and the back got taken down in the backfield for like a loss of 3 or 4 yards on the play. Austin Deculus committed a terrible holding penalty on one and then had one of the worst reps of pass protection you'll ever see. Got Will Levis smashed in half. Like, it was a really bad rep from Deculus, who continues to struggle. Both of those guys continue to not impress me, and the worst part about it is, Justin, they're playing in the second half of preseason football against teams that did not play their starters for a snap. Like, they are going against guys who will not be in the league in 3 weeks, and they're getting abused. It's terrible. It's really bad. Do you think, I mean, are we still expecting Borgonzi to sign some tackle depth here? They cannot roll into the season with Austin Deculus on the roster. They just can't do it. He can't be on the roster. I understand if they want to keep Cordell Volson for the experience factor, but Deculus has got to go. He is a weight dragging down the other four guys he's playing next to whenever he's on the field.
He's been as bad as I thought he was going to be the moment that they signed him. I hated the signing from the beginning. He's been exactly what we thought. I don't know. I'd love to know what the line of thinking was, right, for Borgonzi. I know it wasn't a big contract or anything crazy, but never did I think he could be their swing tackle, and he's proving that. He's given up 3 sacks in 2 preseason games despite playing against backups. Can you imagine this guy starting against a first-team D-line? If one of those guys got hurt, Latham or Moore, it would be full-blown disaster. It would be Dennis Daly, Andre Dillard level of he's absolutely killing the offense on a possession basis. That's how bad he is. They've got to cut him. There's no need to have him on the 53-man roster. Like, when they signed him, we thought he'd be on the 53 just by default. Absolutely yeah. Not. They've got to figure something out. I know they've got Brandon Crenshaw Dixon. I don't have much faith in him either, but it definitely can't be Austin Deculus at the swing tackle spot. He was definitely a loser last night for the second preseason game in a row.
Yeah. Fernando Carmona, to answer the question that came in the chat, how did he play? Like, I didn't notice him particularly, but I think that's a good thing. He played 19 snaps, 15 of them in pass protection, only 4 run blocking snaps. He did allow one hurry, but I thought he handled himself well. Again, still against backups, but
I thought the first team O-line in general was fine.
They were fine.
They opened the game up with the 9-yard run play by Tony Pollard. I wouldn't say Ward was routinely under pressure. Like, of course, the third down throw, he had to create a little bit off script. And then I guess his sack, he also kind of escaped the pocket, rolled to the sideline where he lost the fumble. But I thought they were fine. They weren't, like, outstanding, but they weren't bad either. Yes, again, going up against second team D-line of Seattle, but some decent football players. That's why I'm not writing home, you know, the performance, but I thought they were fine.
Yeah, I thought they were okay. I think that Robert Saleh said this, and I think I played this in the open of the show, but they got to convert that 4th-and-1. It's the first one, they got to convert. The second one,
I agree.
The second one was the third team offense with, and Hendon Hooker was the quarterback, and they couldn't pick up half a yard on the sneak. Like, yeah, you'd love to see them convert that, but the first team offense has got to convert that fourth and one from their own 35-ish yard line, which I like that Saleh went for it, by the way. He did say in the post game that this is more aggressive than he would be given where the ball was at, but I think it's an indicator of that he's going to be aggressive. And that, I mean, how desperate have we been? Even Mike Vrabel wouldn't go for it on fourth down and fourth and short enough. Like, I get it. You don't want to do it at your own 35-yard line usually, but at least the idea that this offense will be willing to be aggressive and go for it on fourth down, especially when they feel like they have the advantage in the trenches with their offensive line in the run game. Like, I like that they went for it. I don't really get why Tajay Spears was the back on the play. Like,
I would have had Pollard, or even, I know it was too early in the game, but like their best
Chestnut.
Yeah. Or Chestnut, or even Darnus Johnson. I was going to go with, like, either one of those guys would have been a better choice than Spears or even Carter.
I think that this is an accurate comment from Ray Skull. Spears is not good in short yardage situations. That would have been a Pollard run in the regular season.
Oh, for sure. 100%. Spears is small. He's not a short yardage guy. He's not a, I'm going to line it up jumbo and just run, you know, for, like, that's not his game, and that's fine.
Yeah. We have some meltdown going on in the chat. Jason McDonald, I said 7 wins last week. I say 4 wins after last night. I mean, if your expectation is changing by 3 wins off of a preseason game, I can't get there
wrong
with you.
It's all we'll say. You're doing it wrong.
Glasgowsta, Nate Tice not positive about our RPO strategy. Look, we don't know what the strategy is right now. I don't know how, like, Saleh has reiterated this multiple times. They are not calling these games the way they will call them in the regular season. He has explicitly stated, we don't want to show our hand. So we don't know what this is going to look like. He specifically said, we're not scheming it for guys to get open. He said, we're not making it easy on them to go out there and get fine completions in the passing game. Because, and this goes to my point that I wanted to bring up on Carnell Tate, who obviously has, what, 5 targets and 0 catches through 2 preseason games. This is, I'm going to play this tomorrow, but I'll just mention it briefly here, and we'll talk more about it tomorrow, Justin. But Saleh said, we're not moving these guys around. Like, Dable's going to be able to move Tate around the formation. We are hardly using any motion. We are not running our offense right now. Like, we're just not. When it comes time to where we want to scheme up targets for guys, we'll do so. But that's not where we're at. That's not what we're doing. That's not the goal of preseason. The goal of preseason is not to generate hype and fantasy football movement up the ADP draft boards. Like, the Niners can do whatever they want to do with DeJuan Stribling, who I think DeJuan Stribling is going to be a very good receiver in the NFL. I think it was a good second round pick that everybody panned at the time because everybody wants to overreact and rely too much on mock drafts and consensus boards. I think he's going to be a fine receiver for the Niners. I think he's going to be a good receiver for the Niners. I think weeks 1 through 4, the topic on fantasy football discussions is going to be, where's DeJuan Stribling? DeJuan Stribling, I think is how you pronounce it. Where's DeJuan Stribling? He was so good in the preseason. Where is he? Because weeks 1 through 4, he's not going to be a major member of the offense. And then maybe he gets worked in more slowly. Like, I don't know. Maybe he has a big week 1 role. But I think that, like, these teams are not showing you what they're going to do in the regular season in the preseason, including the Titans. And that's why I think Carnell Tate's usage in the preseason games is totally whack. Like, this is not how they're going to use these guys. And so if Nate Tice is concerned about the RPO usage right now, good. This isn't how it's going to look. And maybe that's cope. And maybe that's me just holding on to faith that I shouldn't be holding on to. But I really don't believe that this is what the offense is going to look like. Like, I think there's going to be a lot more schemed up targets for these guys. I mean, when Saleh tells you we are not showing our hand, I believe him because I've seen the offense play in 2 straight weeks. And it doesn't look like an offense that's trying to show their hand at all.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll say I do want to watch the Nate Tice breakdown, though, because he's good at what he does.
Did he break down or did he just tweet?
Was it just a tweet? Was it a play he tweeted? That's what I mean. Like, I thought maybe there was a play that he pointed to specifically.
Let us know, Glasgow. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll check it. I'll check the timeline later to see what he means.
Any other players in this game that stood out to you? I mean, you mentioned Darnus Johnson. I thought he ran really well, ran really hard. I did see that a lot of people on Twitter were replying to some of my tweets saying, like, and this was a serious comment by people, Justin. Will Levis led multiple scoring drives. Cam Ward only led 1 field goal drive. How can you make fun of Will Levis for going 4 for 9 with 1.7 yards per pass attempt? I mean, they literally didn't let him throw because they did. Number one, they were running the ball really well. But especially when it came down to it, I think in the second half of that game, preseason be damned, it doesn't matter. Brian Daboll wanted to win that game, and Robert Saleh wanted to win that game. They wanted to show their locker room that, hey, we can overcome a 16-3 deficit and go win that kind of game, even if it's backups against backups and there's no scheming and it doesn't matter. Everything matters. They had a 3rd-and-4 near the goal line, and they ran the ball. They continued to run the ball. They didn't trust Will Levis to throw the ball because they don't trust him, because he was terrible. He was brutally awful. Any trade value he might have had 2 weeks ago has completely evaporated into nothing. They got to cut him. He's not going to be on this team. He's so bad. But they were just running the ball on 3rd-and-4, on 3rd-and-3, on 3rd-and-7 because they don't trust Will Levis to pass it. And they did a really good job running it too, so.
Yes, they sure did. Yeah, I think the ship has sailed on them getting a trade offer for Will Levis, right? Like, I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't feel that it's going to. It is what it is. Like, we used to say, well, they can't cut him. They want to get something for him. I think they're probably just going to have to outright release him.
Yeah, I think so, too. I got to respond to Jason McDonald here. Seeing Drew Lock work the Titans influenced my opinion as much as anything the Titans did. I mean, Drew Lock worked the Titans on one play. One play. Everything else, I told you, was a check down, a short.
He's a good backup quarterback, too. I'm sorry, he's a very good backup quarterback.
He is. He had one nice scramble to pick up a first down where you'd like to see. Again, I think that was, might have been Barton or somebody was late getting out of the rush. Femi, actually. Femi rushed too far upfield. And didn't contain the quarterback on that one. But for the most part, it's not like Drew Lock was completing passes because he was taking all the checkdowns and hitting his tight ends 2 yards downfield and his running backs at the side. Like, he wasn't completing downfield throws outside of one busted coverage that's a pure miscommunication. The Titans were not getting beat in one-on-one situations this time around, their defense anyway. They gave up a huge touchdown run because Alante Taylor wasn't in position on a play that's difficult to cover, and it was really well blocked. And yeah, you don't want to have really well blocked plays, but again, if Alante Taylor makes the right play there, it's a 10-yard gain, and then your defense has another chance to get off the field. So I would not say Drew Lock worked the Titans. I think Curtis Rourke did last week. I mean, that was Dazon Stribling 7 catches in the first half against your starting corners. Yeah, that was bad. This was a totally different situation yesterday. Yeah, there's two big blown plays where you miss your read or you miscommunicate on what you're supposed to be doing. But other than that, the defense did play well, and I get it. Two plays like that against the Jets, and it's 14 points on the scoreboard in a real game that matters. And yeah, you can't have it, but you can have it in week two of the preseason where you still have time to go correct it. So that's where I'm at. I do think like there's a plenty of teaching moments from this. Again, if you are trying to extrapolate preseason into the regular season, you must be brand new to the NFL. You must not have watched a lot of NFL seasons before, because we've done this every year forever. Like, come on, you know?
I'm with you. Can we hit the thing for Nash Rust as we've
got to hit the
one? You know, hit the thing.
Yeah,
I'm can't stay, that. But enjoyed the Discord chat last night. Good bunch of people. Nash Rust, thank you so much for the super chat tip. And thank you for being a premium member of the Music City Audible YouTube and on Discord. I think it's a good time to remind people that we've got something pretty cool going over there on the Discord. So head over to the YouTube and sign up. Become a premium member of Music City Audible. Join the Discord chat. Game day thread was popping last night. And remember, in season, Friday streams will be for premium members only. So we do believe that is a huge benefit of joining the Music City Audible premium Discord. Graver, do you've got anything else?
No, I would just say, like, the people who are very discouraged right now, like, here's what really matters. To go back to the title of the episode.
Well, everything matters.
But here's what really matters. The Titans have shown progress from where they were last week in the preseason to where they were this week. They're also 2-0. And I said this last week, Justin, like, you can play an ugly game. If you come out with a win, I'm not going to complain about an ugly win. I'd take an ugly win over a pretty loss any day of the week. And so what I think really this team showed last night is Saleh's culture being instilled here. There was grit shown by that 2nd and 3rd team units. Granted, they're not going to get a lot of run in the season, but those are guys that you might have to call on at some point randomly to come up and make a play or be part of your team when injuries happen. And to see the way the Titans sideline in a meaningless preseason game reacted when who got the second interception? I didn't even recognize
Derek
the number.
Canteen? Was it my boy Derek Canteen?
Was it? I'm looking at the box score. Interceptions. Derek Canteen, number 42. When Derek Canteen picked off that ball that sealed the game, the way the Titans sideline erupted, led by Jeffrey Simmons in the middle of it, going nuts, that you guys, you second teamers, you just pulled off the comeback. A 16-3 deficit turned into a 19-16 win. It doesn't matter.
Well, everything matters.
But it does matter. For this team that's rebuilding, that needs to see them there, that they have the ability to overcome a deficit like that, to keep working, and the fact that the sideline was that into the game. 4 minutes, 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter of a meaningless preseason game, and everyone on the sideline is cheering for their brother. That matters to me. Like, that, to me, is the biggest takeaway I have.
Right? Like, it was so much fun to watch the veterans kind of cheering on the younger players of the game. Jeffrey Simmons said it during the sideline interview. He was pumped about the Anthony Hill interception. He called him Young Buck, as he will celebrate Young Buck with the interception there. So, yeah, certainly. Definitely. It certainly feels like the camaraderie and the culture, the little things that really faltered, I think, under Brian Callahan, are slowly starting to come together under this new, more experienced staff, because those things take time. They don't change overnight.
Right. And my last point here, this is where I think the most can be gleaned from the preseason. The Titans are still talent deficient when it comes to stacking up against real playoff teams around the league. I do not think the Titans have the talent to be a playoff team right now. I just think that's where you're at. And the biggest tell of that to me is that in the preseason, where you're not scheming, you're not helping guys out, like Robert Saleh said, we're not making it easy on the offense right now. You are relying purely on your individual talent to go beat the individual talent of the player across from you. And the Titans do not have the individual talent to win those matchups on a consistent basis. They're going to rely on Brian Daboll scheming guys open. They're going to have to make plays when their plays are there to be made, and probably not going to be winning a ton of big one-on-ones outside of Jeffrey Simmons wrecking guards when he has a one-on-one matchup, which he did last night, by the way, and forced a quick throwaway from Drew Lock that ended up, maybe there was a penalty or maybe it was a checked down play, but it was a really nice quick pressure by Jeffrey Simmons on one play last night. But my point is, that's the level of this set. And that's a team that wins between 5 and 8 games, probably 6 or 7 games, if I had to guess right now, because they're going to make some plays now and again. They're going to get a lot of help from their coaching staff, scheming guys open, but ultimately they don't really have the talent right now to go make those plays over and over on a consistent basis, unless they just have a string of great luck this season, Justin. So that's why I think, like, that's what I'm really taking out of this, is seeing that this team is still a work in progress. They're going to have another talent acquisition cycle next offseason where they can really try to take it to the next level. They're going to have player development throughout the course of the season, their first round picks, their rookies, their sophomore players. But right now, they're going to be an average to slightly below average football team. And that's okay. That's okay to be there in the first year of Robert Saleh's tenure.
I'm with you. I think all you want to see is progress, and it would be pretty tough if they can't show progress based on how horrible they were last year. You just want to know that the boat is rowing in the right direction. That's going to do it for today's 70-minute edition of the Music City Audible podcast, live on Monday morning to dissect week 2 of the preseason. Tennessee Titans beat the Seattle Seahawks 19-16. But as this show is known to do, or at least I'd like to think so, the bigger picture, more in-depth analysis. Final plug, if you haven't yet, join the Music City Audible Discord. Head over to the YouTube page. You can find the option there by clicking the button join. Very seamless from there. If you have any questions, don't be afraid to reach out to us, even on Twitter, wherever you can find us if you're struggling with how to join. The game thread was popping yesterday. Heck of a show. As well, on the Discord today, with all those free memberships being gifted out, a couple of new signups live, Kendall the Yapper, and everyone else that signed up or got the free memberships from Angry Fetus and Gary Soto. Looking forward to seeing you in the Discord and continuing this conversation probably later today. We'll be back tomorrow to talk more Tennessee Titans football. Until then, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.